people have a bad taste in their mouth from, some people perceive influencers as almost sellouts, where we perceive them as, again, a passion promoter, someone promoting something that they care about because they're willing to put in a bunch of effort for a product themselves because it fits with what they love, what they want to share. And there's nothing better and more authentic and more trustworthy than that type of advocacy, right? It's, again, word of mouth marketing. It's like, who do you trust most in your life when you're going to buy something? It's someone who is a kind of an expert in that industry, right?
Hi, welcome to another episode. I'm your host, Brian Maddox, on the Hard to Market podcast. With me today is William Gasner from Stack Influence. Welcome.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
Can you give our listeners a little bit of your background in the marketing space and how you got involved with Stack Influence?
Absolutely. So long story, but I'll try to keep it short. I started selling or creating my own products when I was actually 13, selling them at farmers markets. Started making some jewelry, some handmade cutting boards, which led me to get really into the online marketing world, specifically in the e-commerce space, but built my own websites, et cetera. And about when I was around 21, started my own web development and marketing consulting firm from all the experience I had from selling my own products online, and built over 150 websites in a span of probably 4 years. So really expanded that business, and that led me into lots of different marketing tactics because clients would ask everything of me, and some things I knew really well, some things I didn't, but I would figure them out. And in that time period, I also was still running my own e-commerce companies. A few of them started to really take off, which we can maybe go into, but became a seven-figure seller. And that's which led me into influencer marketing, because influencer marketing was a huge tactic that my business partners and I used to grow those e-commerce businesses. And during a lull of kind of more of some of our sales started to die off because some of the products we were selling were a bit trendy. We had been building out a bunch of technologies in-house for influencer marketing to just make the process more efficient. And that was really the birth of Stack Influence. And what Stack Influence is a marketplace platform that connects brands to influencers, specifically smaller creators, what the industry calls micro-influencers. And it automates collaborations and scales them up, which is one of the two of the biggest challenges dealing with these smaller creators, is working with a lot of them or finding a lot of them, and then making sure that you don't drop the ball when trying to manage them, support them, get them to do everything you say they're going to do. So we had a lot of obviously connections in the space or in the e-commerce space, and people wanted to get their hands on the technologies we built. And that was really the birth of Stack Influence. And 6 years later, here we are. I'm currently the CMO of Stack Influence, and we've gone from a bootstrap company to a venture-backed startup with a run rate of over $3 million. So been quite a journey. Hundreds of thousands of people on the platform, thousands of brands, and yeah, the brief background of my marketing history.
There's lots to dig into, clearly, but one of the things that's probably the more interesting. So you started in a service business, you started then e-com, if I got the order right, and now you're back in a service-based business. Is that right?
It was more so, started really e-com, transitioned to service, went back to e-com, and then now I'm back to service. So
walk me through some of the strengths and weaknesses of, you know, either e-com or service-based businesses. I think for the marketers here listening, some of the distinctions here are easy to lose. So I'm interested in your take on the sort of strengths and weaknesses of each.
Absolutely. So absolutely positives and negatives to both. On the product side, you first off, a lot of upfront work to create a good product. I mean, both take a decent amount of work to make something good. But in the e-com world, there's just so many more logistics, in my opinion, you have to really figure out to get a product out there, is like dealing with manufacturing, dealing with, and depending on what also the product is, like some products aren't, if you have a subscription product, you might be able to get recurring buyers. The businesses I originally were in were kind of one-off purchases, right? Like jewelry and cutting boards. You buy a piece of jewelry, you buy a cutting board, you don't really need a new one for a while if it's a unique piece. So the recurring play there was mostly wholesale, right? Wholesale is a whole other game in itself, and can be harder to get organic traffic, in my opinion, for a lot of the e-com world. Like you have to do a lot of online advertising techniques, again, getting relationships with wholesalers. But at the same time, you can find a pretty targeted niche and target your end customer decently well, depending on what it is. And you have the advantage of these massive marketplaces like Amazon, Target, Walmart, where there's already all these eyeballs there and or consumers to purchase your product, right? If you can rank on Amazon, for example, high enough for keywords where people are searching them, you can become a massive business in a very short time period. On the other side, with the service-based business, right, advantages, in my opinion, are scalability more so than e-com. Obviously, there's some billion-dollar e-commerce businesses, but we look at the companies that have really taken over the world, of the Amazons of the world, the Googles, the social networks, right? They became so large in these massive companies because technology can scale much faster than you can develop products and get those products into the hands of people. So again, similar challenges with getting things off the ground, right? You don't have to deal with manufacturers, you don't have to deal with product inventory, et cetera. However, you have to create a seamless product that actually people want. And sometimes that can take the same amount of effort. But there's another actually kind of interesting positive and negative is upfront cost, right? To get a product off the ground, you need some initial capital, like, or a decent amount, right? You have to pay to actually, if you're developing this thing from scratch, right? Like manufacturing, again, costs, but logistics, you have to get enough inventory in stock. Obviously, there's tactics now with drop shipping where you're not making the product, that can be easier, but also you're not selling something as unique. Whereas a software company, there's a lot of no-code tools out there. Like you can get a website up for less than $100 and start doing some SEO stuff and get it off the ground pretty quickly, or at least get some initial MVP traction to see if it's viable. So positive and negatives to both. But I'm an advocate. I love both industries a lot. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been doing them.
So there's some interesting distinctions here too, I think. And one of the things that has to be difficult, and I think it's an interesting place where you start to really feather into a richer conversation, and that is with e-com, you know, the value-added reseller opportunity seems smaller. The margins seem tighter and thinner and harder to manage than in a service-based business, where the brand reputation on a service-based business gets to be a lot more front and center than it would be in a kind of e-com model. Is that a fair assessment?
That's an absolute fair assessment. Yeah. Margins, again, some people on Amazon like are making, because they take, regardless of Amazon, but Amazon adds to that margin cut because they're taking all these transaction fees, like margins can get very slim. And especially, again, like competing on a marketplace, you have to consistently drop cost to be a competitive product. And that can be if you're also running your own e-commerce website on with Shopify or WordPress, you name it. But margins become slim. And in order to scale, you have to kind of have a decent amount of cash flow to front that cost to make the money that is necessary to become profitable and make it into a very lucrative business. Whereas obviously software can have massive margins, right? It can, some of these companies have like 80% margin because technology is doing the work, especially in SaaS and stuff like that. So those are two things I definitely did not bring up, but are huge positive and negatives of both.
So with the influencer kind of solutions that you have, is it fair to say that at least on the e-com side, that may help add margin to a conversation where that's a little bit harder to get if you're using influencer marketing to help drive up that brand identity and folks using the product that are in that influencer space? Does that increase margin, or is it typically a volume sales sort of play?
So question of, does influencer marketing help with your margins on the e-com side, you're saying?
Yeah.
Absolutely. So the cool thing about influencer marketing is you get this kind of, it's a unique marketing tactic in the world of all of these different ways to get your product out there, in the sense that it gives you more bang for your buck and more value across different sectors. So take just online advertising in general, like running an ad on Facebook, right? Your only really return there is a sale, which at the end of the day is valuable, right? And that's what we all want, right? Is like, get your product out there and people buy it. Money in, money out. However, that is the same thing with influencer marketing, right? People are going to be promoting your product, and that you're going to pay them X amount of money, and then that's going to result ideally in e-commerce sales. However, on top of that, you're not just getting a sale, you're getting a piece of content, right? Someone's going to be creating an image or video piece of content. They're going to be writing up a testimonial of yours. You can now take that and you can use that on other channels. You can use that on your social media channels. You can use that on your website.
Right.
All of those things actually build your brand, right? And that can be sometimes hard to equate exact value to it, but I personally think it's kind of an invaluable thing, right? It's like, what is the value of having a website in general, right? It's like, or a good brand or a good logo. It's like, this creates this image of who you are, who's using your product, and that can really take you to the next level. Also, creating a relationship with a real person, right? Like, getting your product in the hands of someone who's excited about telling their friends about it, telling their family about it, telling people who they're following, as well as right, actually using it, leads to a lot of word of mouth effects. So beyond just that online sale, and then all of those things decrease or increase your margin because you're spending less to get more, right? And it absolutely, that's why we loved the business selling online. It was like, we were giving originally a lot of our money to the advertising platforms of the world, of the Googles and the Facebooks, to drive these sales. And then once we started to send out products to influencers, it became such a better bang for our buck, as far as driving more conversions, doing them for a lower cost, building our brand, getting brand awareness, creating these ongoing relationships with these people who would like become affiliates and consistently promote our products without any ad costs, right? We were just profit sharing. So that's why we got into it. It became a business in itself.
No, and I love it. I think one of the things that's very interesting then is you then pivoted into a service business.
Yeah.
So that transition seems interesting, and I want to talk about it because for two reasons. One, it sounds like the influencer marketing is really targeted at e-com businesses, right? So your local like HVAC company is not going to have any luck with them. The other part of it is, you know, then you moved out of the product space and went exclusively kind of into this service model. So help me with that as well. I mean, that's an interesting sort of next step.
Totally. So going back to scalability, I always love to challenge myself throughout life and always learn and become better regardless of what I'm doing. And the current businesses that I was doing in the e-commerce space, I still love e-commerce. I'm going to get back into it at some point in my life. I mean, we help thousands of e-commerce brands scale. If I had the time, I'd already have a few products under my belt launching. The previous e-commerce businesses that I had started, the reason that some of them are still actually running, I've kind of sold some of them off, but the reason I transitioned out of them mostly was there were limitations to scale I found with the products I was selling. And it goes back to kind of those recurring lower margins, very niche, more niche products, right? And the service-based business, especially with the influencer side, had the potential to be a much more scalable product. Not to say, again, like, there are positives and negatives to both. And there are some e-commerce businesses that do a lot more revenue than what Stack Influencer or a lot of other software been doing. It's just, it has to be the right product. It has to have the right audience. And at the time, the service-based business and the influencer business was really the most, had the most opportunity for that potential scale. And we kind of got to play in both worlds, right? Like, I talk to e-commerce brands every single day and kind of help them grow. And I have a lot of experience myself. So it's enabled me to not only learn new tactics about e-commerce and best ways to use it, but also to create a business that can have a potential to not only help hundreds of thousands of e-commerce brands, ideally millions, but our goal is to actually have 1 billion social media users on the platform too. Be promoting every day.
That's awesome. So, and you get to stay in the e-commerce space by proxy at that point, which is nice.
Exactly.
The so the natural sort of next question I have, I think, is it sounds like your market's double-sided in that you've got, you know, you're working with e-com brands that are looking to drive sales through influencers, but you also have to curate this, for lack of a better way to say it, a stable of influencers to help them come along. So how are you managing that as a workflow?
Definitely always a challenge with any marketplace business being two-sided. And you're completely right in that we have two users to satisfy. If we have too many brands and not enough influencers, the brands aren't happy. But if we have too many influencers and not enough brands, the influencers don't find the right product that they want to collaborate with. So it's always a chicken and the egg issue, right? Especially when you're first starting out. Like, who do you focus on first, right? Do you get influencers? Do you get the brands? How we solved it, and it worked out for us on our first bet, was to go after brands first. We first off had connections, as I said, in the e-commerce industry, a few of them. But what we realized was we needed the demand, right? Like, if we were to reach out to an influencer and say, hey, do you want to be part of this community and collaborate with brands? They'd be like, yeah, cool. What's the brands, right? And then if we don't have brands, we'd just completely lying to them. Whereas with the brands, in the same way as you telling someone you'll build a website for them, if they trust you, you're going to get the job done, right? So we really started out, even though we had software behind us, as very much more of an agency model, right? It was like, what's your goals? We're going to go out and accomplish these goals because we're masters of the e-commerce world and marketing. So we got a few brands under our belt and legitimately started out by just searching on social media and direct messaging people. And now we had the brand to pitch them, right? So one of our first clients was actually, just take a step back. So besides the kind of people in our network that we connected with, how we knew Stack Influence was going to start taking off was, and this is anyone starting a business, even both in the e-commerce space or the marketing space, I think SEO is one of the best tools you have. Like, going back to throwing up a website for pretty cheap, you can do that very inexpensively. And you can start writing some blog posts, creating content around that, posting that content on social media. You don't need any upfront money to do that, right? And you can start testing things out. You can have a website, even in the e-commerce space, that's pre-order, right? that you're just getting email addresses and it's launching soon. Similarly, on the software side, you can really throw something up and just gauge interest. And that's very, very valuable when you're first starting out, because you want to know, do people actually care about this awesome genius idea I think I have, right? And that was really how we also kickstarted, besides the connections we had and we were helping them out, to know that there's a huge amount of desire for what we were building, was writing some different articles, had someone come to us without even speaking to us, sign up and say, I want you guys to get me 200 influencers, right? So that was where we knew, like, wired us money, never spoke to us on the phone, was like, I think this is awesome and I have a huge desire for it. And that was really when we started to build out kind of these initial tools to automate the ability to reach out to these influencers. But again, at first it was an absolute manual process. We were answering, I remember answering like about 150 emails every single day for people who are asking questions. And now we have a 30-person customer support team who does that with hundreds of thousands of people. But yeah, the two-sided issue is still in it, not necessarily as big of a problem it was starting out, of who do we pick first to focus on. But we always have these equilibrium issues that we're facing nonstop, because it's like sometimes the influencer volume exceeds the brand volume and vice versa. And so we're balancing with this equilibrium. And it's gotten much easier because now we have somewhat network effects where, like, right, brands bring more brands, influencers bring more influencers, and we now have this community that satisfies each. But again, to scale it up, we always are kind of sometimes focusing on one side or the other.
So, it's interesting too. I think you've followed like rule number one, which is follow the money, right? I can't imagine the influencers are paying for your service. It's something that the brands are paying for. So totally. getting clients first is usually the best mission. Yes. Figuring out how to solve those client issues is usually mission number two. When it comes to that secondary market, though, of helping influencers become more effective or more valuable, is that something you guys have anticipated monetizing in the future?
Definitely, yeah. So there are numerous levels to that. Right now, our platform is focused on product compensation only. So what I mean by that is an influencer's incentive to collaborate with the brand is to get their product for free. That is their primary, for some people, primary objective, but or incentive. But a secondary thing is, like, people love, they want to start a journey on to become an influencer, or to, even if they are an existing influencer, to kind of build their influencer resume and create relationships with other brands, right? Where things are, where we see the market evolving, because I personally believe people should be paid, obviously, for their work. And so we do, besides, even though that's their main incentive to get a free product or to, like, create brand relationships, we have different gamification features in the platform too. Reward influencers for certain actions they take. And what the platform is evolving to be is, like, you can have different tiers of monetary rewards for different actions, and have access to different brand collaboration opportunities where, and this is where we plan to kind of monetize that influencer or community side to the platform, in the sense that, right, affiliate relationships, for example, right? An influencer can start promoting their product. We plan to create the tools to nurture that and analyze it and take a cut of that, like, commission, right? Brand pays commission for their product, no upfront costs. Influencer gets a cut. We get a cut for all the tools we're helping to facilitate that. In the same way as also certain levels to content quality and curation. So, what has blown up in the space, which is besides the promotion itself, is what people call UGC, user-generated content, specifically in the world of advertising. So creating a video post that's a full testimonial, right? There are levels to helping the creator actually make that post more valuable, editing it, adding captions, adding animations, right? And those things where there can be profit sharing involved using our technology and monetizing and even charging, there's other platforms, and this is something we have discussed. It's not something necessarily in our short-term plans, but access to certain brand collaboration opportunities can be very, very valuable, right? If you work for Nike and you can collaborate with them and you get these larger opportunities, you may be willing to pay a subscription fee to access those things as an influencer, because that relationship could take you much further than that one-off thing. So that's where we see lots of different sides and values to both the influencers and brands that we see evolving. But at the moment, we wanted to get the best, become the best at how do we turn an everyday average person into a content creator or an influencer. I like to call them passion promoters, because I think influencers actually somewhat, even though it's a great SEO term, it says somewhat of a negative connotation, right? Like people have a bad taste in their mouth from, some people perceive influencers as almost sellouts, where we perceive them as, again, a passion promoter, someone promoting something that they care about because they're willing to put in a bunch of effort for a product themselves because it fits with what they love, what they want to share. And there's nothing better and more authentic and more trustworthy than that type of advocacy, right? It's, again, word of mouth marketing. It's like, who do you trust most in your life when you're going to buy something? It's someone who is a kind of an expert in that industry, right? Like, you're trying to get into running, you're going to ask your running friend what the best shoes to buy are. And you're going to trust that more than what Nike's going to tell you in an ad, you know?
Right. So on the influencer side, you're really doing like almost a product-led growth model with a gamification sort of structure to help attract those influencers as well. I think that that dynamic is going to be super interesting, because in many ways, the cost of the business for you guys is going to be in serving the influencer side of the conversation. And the revenue side largely is a hands-off kind of exchange. Is that a fair evaluation?
That is. That absolutely is. A lot of our expenses are on predominantly on the influencer side.
How about that?
Yeah. Acquiring people, because the thing is, like, we do things at scale. So it's like, brands don't come to us to work with three people, which could work if you're working with the Kardashians, but they come to us to work with hundreds or thousands, right? So every brand on the platform, like, we need, it's like one to 100 or 1 to 1,000, right? It's like so much aggregate and scale. So to get people to come to us and collaborate with us and become sticky, become part of our community and stay there, right? Keep collaborating on an ongoing basis is where we push a lot of our money, because that's, if we have the influencers, the brands will come. And we also, there's a huge amount of SEO desire also, like, even though is our day one tactic, it's still one of our inbound marketing organic leads. We get dozens of them a day from brands who are just seeking this as a new way to reach, back to our early conversation, decreases or increase their margins and reach more people, you know? So,
yeah. William, that's awesome. So as we start to wrap here, I want to ask a couple questions. They're fairly consistent, but today, who should reach out to you and how can they get a hold of you?
Absolutely. So our main focus is D2C e-commerce brands. We are going to be playing in the software SaaS app world in the near future. But if you're a D2C e-commerce brand, please reach out to us. You can contact me directly at william@stackinfluence.com. You can check out our website, stackinfluence.com. We're on all the socials at stackinfluence. So anywhere basically online, you can find us. But again, a direct email is completely accessible or acceptable. And also, if there's any influencers out there listening, or you want to enter into the influencer world, go check out our website. There's a very simple sign-up form. You do need a public Instagram profile, and there's some follower-based limits and a few things, but we're a very inclusive community that, again, we're trying to bring everyone into the influencer or passion promoter world.
Nice. And in your journey, your marketing journey along the way, what are the three biggest things you picked up What are three biggest lessons?
Three biggest lessons. Number one is don't be afraid to try something, right? Because it's a daunting task, or it seems daunting to create something and get it out there, right? And like, who's going to have my product, right? But there are so many tools out there now that, and you don't need, some people think you need this huge education to like know how to do marketing, right? Like, you can watch a few YouTube videos, you can create a website, you can start creating some blog articles, especially with the advent of a lot of automations with AI. And you can test products very, very fast and see if your idea will stick. And don't be afraid to do that, even though it seems like this huge mountain to climb. Second biggest lesson is don't be afraid of failure. You're going to fail nonstop, right? And that's how you learn. And it's because of the failures, is because we've been successful. And again, you kind of goes back to that mountain, is that like, you're going to face so much adversity along the way and things are going to seem impossible, but keep trying new things, keep looking for new softwares, keep evolving yourself and learning. And the third lesson, kind of, I guess, along the last two, but be resilient, is just don't give up, right? Because sometimes there's been so many times that something takes you down and like you're running these ads and sales are amazing, and then all of a sudden it hits a dead end, or like you're not making the money you were 3 days ago, and it, now you're like losing out a whole bunch of money, but things can turn on a dime. Kind of stick it out, and it's hard work, but it's worth it to get into the online market space. We live in an amazing world now where you can basically be anywhere in the world and be making money for yourself, making a living, and building an amazing business. We started the business legitimately in Bali, in Indonesia, with $5,000 in our bank account, right? So live for cheap, but we're living in a beautiful spot because we could live anywhere. And that's the beautiful thing about marketing. And so I advise everyone to try to get into it at one point or another, whether it's e-commerce or service-based or SaaS or app. Try it. There's more tools out there than there ever have been. And watch some YouTube videos, and good luck.
Awesome. William, thank you so much for being on the show today. It's been super valuable. I appreciate you being here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you. Yes, you. It's 2024 and you don't have a podcast yet. Or maybe you do, but you're struggling with it. We will talk to you about that for free. We'll help you figure out where you might be stuck. Whether or not we can help you, for sure. But also, if you don't have one yet, what are the like first five things you can do? What are some great angles that you can use to make sure that your podcast was sustainable as you start to develop that moving forward? Those consults are free. So reach out at the link below in the show notes, or email me at brian@podcastchef.com. Thanks. Hi, this is Brian. Thanks for listening to the show. Our website, podcastchef.com, has a ton of useful information about how to best leverage podcasting to help you solve some of your business goals and challenges. You can also schedule a demo where we can show you how specifically Podcast Chef and our team can help you with some of your podcasting goals. Thanks.